With 2 months left in the 2021 legislative session, Texas state lawmakers are split on how to address the continuing fallout of February's energy crisis and how to prepare for the future. Texas Public Radio's Dominic Anthony Walsh reports there's a lot to do, but little consensus.
The first point of friction. What to do about the sky-high electricity prices from the final days of the storm?
It just feels like there's just this big overhang, you know, just this huge overhang over the whole market that somehow needs to be reconciled.
That's Beth Garza. She's with the R Street Institute think tank now, but until 2019, she served as the independent market monitor for the ERCOT energy market. The Independent Market Monitor watches for market manipulation and other rule violations, but here's what's important to know. The current market monitor says electricity prices were too high for too long during the storm. This resulted, they say, in about $16 billion in overcharges during the final days of the crisis.
And we're looking at Independent Market Monitor recommendations that really would shrink the pie by $5 billion.
These recommendations to retroactively lower prices would help out many providers that took huge losses from the storm. Providers like CPS Energy in San Antonio, the largest municipally owned utility in the state.
You know, repricing would help the munis quite a bit, or at least leave them flat.
But here's what makes the situation complicated. Not every provider took losses.
Austin Energy is our second biggest utility. I think they're, you know, everyone who made a lot of money is keeping their head low. And Austin Energy's head is very low right now.
That's Arthur Dendrea chatting with energy market investors on a call hosted by Bank of America. At the time, after two other resignations, Dendrea was the only member of the Public Utility Commission, which regulates the electricity market. He had pushed back hard on the idea of repricing, and as he said on this call, he expected Governor Abbott to keep him as the only member of the commission for a while.
In a time like this, when I'm communicating all the time with the legislature, it's easier to just be going through one person. So I expected to be this way for a while, at least a year, with just me up there.
He resigned a week later, in mid-March, when Texas Monthly published a recording of that call. Dendrea will remain in the position until the legislator confirms a replacement, but he's already acted as a key pillar of opposition to repricing, and a lot of time has passed since the storm. Too long, some experts say, to reprice now. Peter Crampton served on the ERCOT board for about half a decade until he resigned in the political fallout from the outages. He's also an economics professor at University of Cologne. He says repricing now would be like the NFL taking back a late first-half touchdown after the game is already done.
That doesn't work. The NFL doesn't do that. And the reason is everything that happens subsequent to that last-second touchdown is affected by the event.
Because NFL teams play and strategize based on the context of the game, what just happened and what's about to happen. And they assume that whatever just happened is set in stone.
And it's the exact same thing in the electricity market.
So I've heard a lot of people say, like, but where we are now, we can't go back. The game was played. Everybody understood the rules. Like, no, they changed the rules in the middle of the game, and they changed the rules in a major way in a meeting that took 6 minutes. I mean, there's basically no discussion about what they were doing.
That's energy and climate consultant Doug Lewin, and he's talking about a Public Utility Commission emergency meeting on the first day of outages, when commissioners ordered ERCOT to remove a kind of circuit breaker for electricity prices, effectively raising the price to its maximum level, where it stayed for days, even after the outages stopped. Lewin says this is like a referee changing the rules as the game is being played.
It's more like that. It's chaos.
ERCOT and the Public Utility Commission, for their part, have argued that their approach to pricing was necessary and appropriate due to the energy emergency. So, experts are split. And so are state politicians. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick supports repricing, and the state Senate actually passed a repricing bill. But the House appears to have little appetite for the legislation, and Governor Greg Abbott has implied repricing might be unconstitutional. As for the consequences of inaction, back to Beth Garza, former independent market monitor.
At some point, it's money, right? At some point, it's just money, and at some point, we're all going to have to pay for it somehow.
Ratepayers in affected areas are likely to see rates creep up in the coming years, unless some money is moved around. But this whole conversation is focused on how to treat a symptom of a deeper failure. These high prices happened, fundamentally, because demand for electricity skyrocketed as supply dropped. The state is split on how to make sure that doesn't happen again.
The first thing that comes to my mind is that electricity is only as reliable as gas delivery.
That's University of Cologne economics professor and former ERCOT board member Peter Crampton again.
So if there is no gas, there is no electricity during a sustained shortage event. The question is, can gas be made reliable during a winter storm event? And the technical answer is yes, of course it can be. But will it happen?
Well, it depends. If it's left to the natural gas market, to oil and gas companies, they won't have the same types of economic incentives to improve as electricity plants will, because power plants that couldn't maintain supply lost a lot of money. But natural gas companies...
So what happened in the market was there was a 45% drop in supply, so that's less quantity, that's bad, but there was a 200-fold increase in price. That's great.
From the perspective of gas companies.
So the 200-fold increase more than compensates for the 45% loss in supply, so you make tons more money.
Now, the Texas Senate has passed Senate Bill 3, mandating weatherization in the natural gas sector. And the Speaker of the Texas House, Dade Phelan, initially said House Bill 14 would do the same thing, mandate natural gas weatherization. But then HB 14 was filed, and turns out, it'll just create a commission which will issue a report that will include recommendations, no mandate. So, what's the difference between a recommendation and a mandate?
The legal requirement. One has the force of law, meaning it will be done, and the other has is merely just a suggestion. The Railroad Commission shows that it is unwilling to enforce laws even when it is required to do so. So I think a suggestion to the Railroad Commission is not worth the paper it's written on.
Krista Castaneda is an oil and gas attorney and engineer, and she was the 2020 Democratic nominee for the Texas Railroad Commission, which regulates the state's natural gas sector. She actually wants to see the commission scrapped and a new agency formed in its place. But she acknowledges that a more realistic outcome falls short of that.
Well, it's probably a watered-down version of the Senate bill. If the House will adopt even some of the winterization requirements, that would be an incremental improvement over what we have now. But it's still not going to be sufficient to prevent the next catastrophe, which may not be based on the same failures that we had this time.
So those are two key points of contention, electricity repricing and natural gas weatherization. Another looming issue, climate change. It's making extreme weather more severe and more frequent. Texas is not ready for it. But the topic of climate change has gotten about as much time in the legislature as it did in this story. I'm Dominic Anthony Walsh in San Antonio.